You are listening to Spud, The Reunion, written by John van der Raet and narrated by Joe Vaz. Published by Pan Macmillan, South Africa. Dedication. For Jules Clarence. This one goes out to the one I love. Monday, 26th May, 2003. Port St. John's, Transkei, Eastern Cape. As nobody would have noticed, it's been a decade since I kept a diary. I hadn't planned to write another one. I never experienced the need until this year, when I was afflicted by a suspected one-third life crisis. I say suspected because I was diagnosed by an unhinged 61-year-old with a diploma from Grootfontein Agricultural College. This new diary remains untitled for now. I'm unofficially calling it the one-third life crisis diary. Hopefully, in these pages I will establish that I'm not suffering from an existential crisis, and that the fresh winds of honesty will disperse the doubts that have lingered over my scene for too long. Until that day of great fortune arrives and I can ink Spud, the unexpected Academy Award winner, onto the front cover, I'm sticking with a life crisis vibe. I concede it's not the most edifying of titles, but with a readership of just one, the pressure to create mastery at every turn is negated. There's no need to impress myself. I'm afraid that ship has already sailed and sunk. In desperate moments, it feels like my entire life has been one Herculean effort to impress everyone against the odds. That I've only really impressed my father and his dog would indicate that the promise of my youth has been punctured by the realities of my adult life. As I scribbled those words into my new diary, it so happened that I was sitting cross-legged beside an empty bucket on a sandbank in the Umzimvubu River. I was waiting for my father, who had taken Woodrot, his fishing boat, on an exploratory mission upriver in search of large mullet, while I worked on flexing my writing muscles and tan. Dad is 61, but he still considers himself a teenager. After his nasty brush with a communist mole in his calf at the turn of the millennium, my father retired from being unemployed, cashed in his RA early, and assembled a bucket list that would have intimidated an adrenaline junkie with a face of tattoos. Naturally, my father refused to call his list a bucket list, because any 61-year-old who's about to turn 20 doesn't do death. "I've survived communism before. I'll survive it again," declared Dad to the bewildered oncologist, who, unlike my father, didn't mix his melanomas with his Marxism. Before we pull out the bugle for the last post, it must be acknowledged that Dad has bounced back from his terrifying ordeal incredibly well. Too well for Mom, as she's never been much into marlin fishing and bungee jumping. Nevertheless, I can only admire my father's bullish outlook, even if I rarely follow the logic behind all the optimism. Of course, it isn't as easy for Mom and myself to forget Dad's communist mole, because we can see the crater in his calf whenever we follow in his footsteps. The pulse of a motor drew my attention upriver. Woodrot rounded the bend. My father stood steadfast and unshaven behind the wheel of his diminutive vessel, the remaining wisps of his silver hair fluttering in the breeze. It was evident from Dad's exuberant gesticulating that he'd either met with success or flattened all the beers in the cool box. "Johnny!" he shouted over the engine's drone. "We've struck mullet gold!" I waded out to seize Woodrot before its propeller ploughed into the sandbank. "There's a shoal as long as your arm at second bridge," hollered Dad, like a feverish speculator who had arrived late for the Kimberley diamond rush. Hopping aboard, I was relieved to escape my dismal preoccupations and leave them on the sandbank, where they would be washed out by the tide and churned into nothingness by the restless wild coast waves. Woodrot doesn't possess any technological functions outside of its accelerator lever and steering wheel, which makes it impossible to deduce the boat's top speed. Suffice to say that with an estimated 3-knot tailwind and the tide in its favor, Woodrot was swifter than the women on the riverbank carrying firewood on their heads, but was outpaced by the child in red shorts who ran ahead of Woodrot for over a kilometer asking for sweets. My father, who grew up in the old Siskai, believes he is fluent in isiXhosa. He maintains that he spoke the language before he spoke English. Unfortunately, he learned the local lingo from Uncle Aubrey, who picked it up from his best friend Kololo, who was already an accomplished cigarette smuggler by the age of 7 and may be responsible for Uncle Aubrey's dodgy lung capacity. I'm not convinced that Kololo, the entrepreneur, was the best language teacher for the Milton lads,